You are now listening to Jess's Lit on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Jess's Lit. It is a gloomy evening today here in Vancouver, BC. I hope everyone is doing all right. It is a fill-in for me today. I decided to fill in for another show because I've been hearing a lot of good things about my possible new sections that I'm going to propose today. Today's an exciting day. I'm going to start a new series. I know we haven't really touched on new series, but I've decided that I guess a change would be a good thing. The new series would be a short story reading series. And so I will be reading not quite short, but they are short in a sense, short stories. And I definitely won't be able to finish a whole story in one show, although if I do find a short enough story, that will be the case. But the one I've chosen for today and for the next few episodes, it is highly unlikely I'll be able to finish it in one episode, but it is a very famous one. I will tell you all the title of the story in just a bit, but yeah, I've decided to do this. And if you guys, you know, although I have chosen this one on my own, if you guys have any opinions or thoughts on other short stories or, you know, prose, fiction, nonfiction, whatever, just any kind of book that you want me to read over, just shoot me a text or email. Or just let me know, and I'll be happy to go over it and read it with you guys. But in between the readings, just to kind of spice up the mood a bit, we'll play some songs. I have chosen a few songs from a particular artist. It is an indie folk pop artist called Fontaine from Winnipeg, Manitoba. And they identify as queer and indigenous from the Nehiya Iskwu heritage. Please check them out if you guys are interested. But yeah, without further ado, here's some ads, PSAs, and some show promos. And then we'll play the first song of the day right after. It'll be called Homemaker from Fontaine. So after some ads, PSAs, and show promos, I will play Homemaker, and then we'll get right to the readings. So we'll be right back.
It's Nardwar to Human Serviette, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM at doo-doo-loo-doo, doo-doo.
We have been called the Indians.
Justified in opening fire that day. Amy Allen has more.
Virus took on many shapes, the bear, the elk, the antelope.
Hosted by the Indigenous Collective of CITR 101.9 FM, Unceded Airwaves unveils the hidden pages of Indigenous history and contemporary existence. We are back and looking for passionate folks to contribute to the process of putting together our weekly radio show. Our community centers Indigenous joy, excellence, and current issues. Friends and allies are welcome. No experience is necessary. Come learn with us. Our Instagram is Unceded Airwaves, and that's the best way to keep up with us. If you're interested in getting involved or you have any questions, email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca.
Hastings Crossing is Vancouver's eclectic heart, a welcoming, diverse community rooted in social innovation, compassion, and cultural wisdom. Situated downtown along Hastings between Richards and Gore, you will find some of Vancouver's OG businesses like Nemesis Coffee, Meat and Bread, Dressu, Nuba, and many more. By supporting local businesses and social enterprises in Hastings Crossing, you are also helping to shape a more resilient, inclusive, and sustainable local economy in the downtown Eastside. Find out more about how Hastings Crossing Business Improvement Association is working to support the people and economies of Vancouver's downtown east side at hxbia.com or follow us on Instagram at hxbia.
If you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshy has you covered. Stop in today at Freshy on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshy on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshy. Eat. Energize.
Are you interested in being advertised on the radio? CITR radio station broadcasts across 6,000 square kilometers, which means our airwaves reach 3 million folks across the land. From Point Grey Peninsula to Fraser Valley and as far north as Gibson's and Coquitlam Mountain. To find out how you can be advertising with CITR, contact advertising@citr.ca. advertising@citr.ca. Rates start at $100. Strut your stuff and do it with CITR today.
Never wanted to be a homemaker. Always wanted to live in the city. With the coffee shops and little bars and the sirens and the busy cars, that's all I thought I'd need. I never was somebody's girl, so forgive me if I'm a little scared to give this thing a whirl. But honey, you know that you're making it easy.
Now you just finished listening to some ads, PSAs, and show promos, and the song that just played right now is called Homemaker by Fontaine. Now we'll get right into the reading, the first ever reading series that I'm doing with y'all. I'm really excited, and I hope you guys all have a great time. It is going to take some time reading this, and so you guys should, or I recommend that you kind of allow this series to take, you know, several episodes to be safe, or to, I guess, carry this on with a little bit of ease. I do think that it will take, you know, more than a couple episodes to get through one story, depending on how, you know, long it is. But today, the first story that we will start on is called The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. I'm not sure if you guys are aware of this short story, but it is a very famous one. Franz Kafka himself is a very famous figure in literature, a very influential figure in literature, and has many people who look up to him regarding his literary works and just his way of conveying the realities of society. And so please check him out. He is a very interesting person. I really enjoyed reading this story and his other stories. This is, I think, my second time reading it, but I would be very happy to read this again. It was a really good short story. And without any spoilers, it's basically about a person, of course, a person who experiences a metamorphosis. Now, I won't explain to you what kind of metamorphosis this person experiences, but at the very end of the story, we will have a brief chat, or I will have a brief chat, to kind of discuss the whole, you know, big picture of this story. This story does raise a lot of philosophical questions. It does touch upon very deep questions about reality, about the self, about, you know, emotion. It's a very deep story, formed into a fictional masterpiece. I really enjoyed this story, and I hope you guys too. For the people who've already read this story, it'll be nice to, you know, just kind of follow along like an ebook. I'll be playing the role of an ebook in a sense, with a bit of songs in between there and there to kind of ease the, you know, the reading environment. But yeah, we won't waste any more time and get on with this. This is Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis. As Gregor Samsa awoke one morning from uneasy dreams, he found himself transformed in his bed into a gigantic insect. He was lying on his hand, as it were armor-plated, back, and when he lifted his head a little, he could see his dome-like brown belly divided into stiff, arched segments, on top of which the bed quilt could hardly keep in position and was about to slide off completely. His numerous legs, which were pitifully thin compared to the rest of his bulk, waved helplessly before his eyes. "What has happened to me?" he thought. It was no dream. His room, a regular human bedroom, only rather too small, lay quiet between the four familiar walls. Above the table on which a collection of cloth samples was unpacked and spread out, Samsa was a commercial traveler, hung the picture which he had recently cut out of an illustrated magazine and put into a pretty gilt frame. It showed a lady with a fur cap on and a fur stole, sitting upright and holding out to the spectator a huge fur muff, into which the whole of her forearm had vanished. Gregor's eyes turned next to the window and the overcast sky. One could hear raindrops beating on the window gutter, made him quite melancholy. What about sleeping a little longer and forgetting all this nonsense, he thought. But it could not be done, for he was accustomed to sleep on his right side, and in his present condition he could not turn himself over. However, violently, he forced himself towards his right side. He always rolled on to his back again. He tried it at least 100 times, shutting his eyes to keep from seeing his struggling legs, and only desisted when he began to feel in his side a faint, dull ache he had never experienced before. "Oh God," he thought, "what an exhausting job I've picked on, traveling about day in, day out. It's much more irritating work than doing the actual business in the office. And on top of that, there's the troubles of constant traveling, of worrying about train connections, the bed and irregular meals, casual acquaintances that are always new and never become intimate friends. The devil take it all." He felt a slight itching up his belly, slowly pushed himself on his back nearer to the top of the bed so that he could lift his head more easily, identified the itching place where it was surrounded by many small white spots, the nature of which he could not understand, and made it to touch it with a leg, but drew the leg back immediately, for the contact made a cold shiver run through him. He slid down again into his former position. This getting up early, he thought, makes one quite stupid. A man needs to sleep. Other commercials live like Harman Woman. For instance, when I come back to the hotel of a morning to write up the orders, I've got, "These others are only sitting down to the breakfast. Let me just try that with my chief. I'd be sacked on the spot." Anyhow, that might be quite good for me. Who can tell? If I didn't have to hold my hand because of my parents, I'd have given notice long ago. I'd have gone to the chief and told him exactly what I think of him. That would knock him anyways from his desk. It's a queer way of doing, too, the sitting on high at a desk and talking down to employees, especially when they have to come quite near because the chief is hard of hearing. Well, there's still hope. Once I've saved enough money to pay back my parents' debts to him, that should take another 5 or 6 years. I'll do it without fail. I'll cut myself completely loose then. For the moment, though, I'd better get up, since my train goes at 5. He looked at the alarm clock ticking on his chest. Heavenly Father, he thought. It was 6:30, and the hands were quite moving. The hands were quietly moving on. It was even past the half hour. It was getting on toward 6:45. Had the alarm clock not gone off? From the bed, one could see that it had been properly set for 4:00. Of course it must have gone off. Yes, but was it possible to sleep quietly through that ear-splitting noise? Well, he had not slept quietly, yet apparently all the more soundly for that. But what was he to do now? The next train went at 7:00. To catch that, he would need to hurry like mad, and his samples weren't even packed up, and he himself wasn't even feeling particularly fresh and active. And even if he did catch the train, he wouldn't avoid a row with the chief, since the firm's porter would have been waiting for the 5:00 train and would have long since reported his failure to turn up. The porter was a creature of the chief's, spineless and stupid. Well, supposing he were to say he was sick, but that would be most unpleasant and would look suspicious, since during his 5 years' employment, he had not been ill once. The chief himself would be sure to come up with the sick insurance doctor, would reproach his parents with their son's laziness, and would cut all excuses short by referring to the insurance doctor, who, of course, regarded all mankind as perfectly healthy malingerers. And would he be so far wrong on this occasion? Gregor really felt quite well, apart from a drowsiness that was utterly superfluous after such a long sleep, and he was even unusually hungry. As all this was running through his mind at top speed without his being able to decide to leave his bed, the alarm clock had just struck 6:45. There came a cautious tap at the door behind his head of his bed. "Gregor," said a voice. It was his mother. "It's 6:45. Hadn't you a train to catch?" That gentle voice. Gregor had a shock as he heard his own voice answering hers. Unmistakably his own voice. It was true, but with a persistent, horrible tweaking, twittering squeak behind it like an undertone, which left the words in their clear shape only for the first moment, and then rose up reverberating around them to destroy their sense, so that one could not be sure one had heard them rightly. Gregor wanted to answer at length and explain everything, but in the circumstances, he confined himself to saying, "Yes, yes, thank you, Mother. I'm getting up now." The wooden door behind them must have kept the change in his voice from being noticeable outside, for his mother contented herself with the statement and shuffled away. Yet this brief exchange of words had made the other members of the family aware that Gregor was still in his house, in the house, as they had not expected, and at one of the side doors his father was already knocking, gently, yet with his fist. "Gregor, Gregor," he called, "what's the matter with you?" And after a little while he called again in a deeper voice, "Gregor, Gregor." At the other side door his sister was saying in a low, plaintive voice, "Gregor, aren't you well? Are you needing anything?" He answered them both at once, "I'm just ready," and did his best to make his voice sound as normal as possible by enunciating the words very clearly and leaving long pauses between them. So his father went back to his breakfast, but his sister whispered, "Gregor, open the door, do." However, he was not thinking of opening the door and felt thankful for the prudent habit he had acquired in traveling of locking all doors during the night, even at home. His immediate attention was to get up quietly without being disturbed, to put on his clothes and, above all, eat his breakfast, and only then consider what else was to be done, since in bed, he was well aware, his meditations would come to no sensible conclusion. He remembered that often enough, in bed, he had felt small aches and pains, probably caused by awkward postures, which had proved purely imaginary once he got up. And he looked forward eagerly to seeing his morning delusions gradually fall away, that the change in his voice was nothing but the precursor of a severe chill, a standing ailment of commercial travelers he had not the least possibly doubt. To get rid of the quilt was quite easy. He had only to inflate himself a little, and it fell off by itself. But the next move was difficult, especially because he was so uncommonly broad. He would have needed arms and hands to hoist himself up. Instead, he had only the numerous little legs, which never stopped waving in all directions, and which he could not control in the least. When he tried to bend one of them, it was the first to stretch it, self-straight, and did he succeed at last in making it do what he wanted, all the other legs, meanwhile, waved the more widely in a high degree of unpleasant agitation. But what's the use of lying idle in bed?" said Gregor to himself. He thought that he might get out of bed with the lower part of his body first, but this lower part, which he had not yet seen, and of which he could form no clear conception, proved too difficult to move. It shifted so slowly, and when finally, almost wild with annoyance, he gathered his forces together and thrust out recklessly, he had miscalculated the direction and bumped heavily against the lower end of the bed, and the stinging pain he felt informed him that precisely this lower part of his body was at the moment probably the most sensitive. So he tried to get the top part of himself out first, and cautiously moved his head toward the edge of the bed. That proved easy, though, and despite its breadths and the mass of the bulk of his body, at last slowly followed the movement of his head. Still, when he finally got his head free over the edge of the bed, he felt too scared to go on advancing, for after all, if he let himself fall in this way, it would take a miracle to keep his head from being injured. And at all costs, he must not lose consciousness now. Precisely now, he would rather stay in bed. But when after a repetition of the same efforts he lay in his former position again, sighing, and watched his little legs struggle against each other more wildly than ever, if that were possible, and saw no way of bringing any order into his arbitrary confusion, he told himself again that it was impossible to stay in bed, and that the most sensible course was to risk everything for the smallest hope of getting away from it. At the time, he did not forget to remind himself occasionally that cool reflection, the coolest possible, was much better than desperate resolves. In such moments, he focused his eyes as sharply as possible on the window, but, unfortunately, the prospect of the morning fog, which muffled even the other side of the narrow street, brought him little encouragement and comfort. 7 o'clock already?" he said to himself, when the alarm clock chimed again. 7 o'clock already, and still such a thick fog. And for a little while he lay quiet, breathing lightly, as if perhaps expecting such complete repose to restore all things to their real and normal condition. Now we'll take a little quick break here. It is kind of getting into the good stuff now. He has just found out that he turned into this weird bug, and he's coming to terms with it. He still, I guess, can't really believe that he's this weird bug. His parents and his family members do not know yet. And so everything is going downhill. But before we continue on, we'll have a quick break with another song from Fontaine. It'll be called Yarrow Lover. So we'll give this one a listen. Here we go.
Say that we are in the shittiest part of a rom-com. Well, I say that you're right, but would you let me hold you tight until the morning? I don't want to miss your laugh. I want to hear it every day, my sweet baby. There's a time for everything, and I'm afraid that ours is up, my little lady. I know you're gonna find another. Summertime, and I'll miss the days when you were mine. And I loved it when you kissed my nose, and how you look when the light hits you just right. I know you're gonna find another. You back, so it seems I've gotta go, my honey. But before I go, can I kiss your face and remember the times that I kissed you all over the place? I know.
That was Yarrow Lover from Fontaine. We will get right into the readings. But then he said to himself, "Before it strikes a quarter past seven, I must be quiet. I must be quite out of this bed without fail. Anyhow, by that time, someone will have come from the office to ask for me, since it opens before seven." And he set himself to rocking his whole body at once in a regular rhythm, with the idea of swinging it out of the bed. If he tipped himself out in that way, he could keep his head from injury by lifting it out all at an acute angle when he fell. His back seemed to be hard and was not likely to suffer from a fall on the carpet. His biggest worry was the loud crash he would not be able to help making, which would probably cause anxiety, if not terror, behind all the doors. Still, he must take the risk. When he was already half out of the bed, the new method was more a game than an effort, for he needed only to hitch himself across by rocking to and fro. It struck him how simple it would be if he could get help. Two strong people, he thought of his father and the servant girl, would be amply sufficient. They would only have to thrust their arms under his convex back, lever him out of the bed, bend down with their burden, and then be patient enough to let him turn himself right over onto the floor, where it was to be hoped his legs would then find their proper function. Well, ignoring the fact that the doors were all locked, ought he really to call for help? In spite of his misery, he could not suppress a smile at the very idea of it. He had got so far that he could barely keep his equilibrium when he rocked himself strongly, and he would have to nerve himself very soon for the final decision, since in 5 minutes' time, it would be quarter past seven when the front doorbell rang. "That's someone from the office," he said to himself, and grew almost rigid, while his little legs only jigged across about all the faster. For a moment, everything stayed quiet. "They're not going to open the door," said Gregor to himself, catching at some kind of irrational hope. But then, of course, the servant girl went as usual to the door with her heavy tread and opened it. Gregor needed only to hear the first good morning of the visitor to know immediately who it was. The chief clerk himself. What a fate, to be condemned to work for a firm where the strongest, smallest omission at once gave rise to the gravest suspicion. Were all employees in a body nothing but scoundrels? Was there not enough them? Was there not among them one single loyal, devoted man who, had he not wasted only an hour or so of the firm's time in a morning, was so tormented by conscience as to be driven out of his mind and actually incapable of leaving his bed? Wouldn't it really have been sufficient to send an apprentice to acquire if any inquiry were necessary at all? Did the clerk himself have to come and thus indicate to the entire family, an innocent family, that this suspicious circumstance could be investigated by no one less versed in affairs than himself? And more through the agitation caused by these reflections than through any act of will, Gregor swung himself out of bed with all his strength. There was a loud thump, but it was not really a crash. His fall was broken to some extent by the carpet. His back, too, was less stiff than he thought. And so there were merely a dull thud, not so very startling. Only he had not lifted his head carefully enough and had hit it. He turned it and rubbed it on the carpet in pain and irritation. "That was something falling down in there," said the chief clerk in the next room to the left. Gregor tried to suppose to himself that something like what had happened to him today might someday happen to the clerk chief. One really could not deny that it was possible, but as if in brusque reply to this supposition, the chief clerk took a couple of firm steps in the next door room, and his patent leather boots creaked. From the right-hand room, his sister was whispering to inform him of the situation. "Gregor, the chief clerk's here." "I know," muttered Gregor to himself, but he didn't dare to make his voice loud enough for his sister to hear it. "Gregor," said his father now from the left-hand room, "the chief clerk has come and wants to know why you didn't catch the early train. We don't know what to say to him. Besides, he wants to talk to you in person, so open the door, please. He will be good enough to excuse the untidiness of your room. Good morning, Mr. Samsa. The chief clerk was calling amiably, meanwhile. He's not well, said his mother to the visitor, while his father was still speaking through the door. He's not well, sir, believe me. What else would make him miss the train? The boy thinks about nothing but his work. It makes me almost cross the way he never goes out in the evenings. He's been here the last 8 days and has stayed at home every single evening. He just sits there quietly at the table reading a newspaper or looking through railway timelines. The only amusement he gets is doing fretwork. For instance, he spent 2 or 3 evenings cutting out a little picture frame. You would be surprised to see how pretty it is. It is hanging in his room. You'll see it in a minute when Gregor opens the door. I must say, I'm glad you've come, sir. We should never have got him to unlock the door by ourselves. He's so obstinate, and I'm sure he's unwell. Though he wouldn't have it to be so this morning. I'm just coming, said Gregor slowly and carefully, not moving an inch for fear of losing one word of the conversation. I can't think of any other explanation, madame, said the chief clerk. I hope it's nothing serious. Although, on the other hand, I must say that we men of business, fortunately and or unfortunately, very often simply have to ignore any slight indisposition, since business must be attended to. Well, can the chief clerk come in now? Asked Gregor's father impatiently, again knocking on the door. No, said Gregor. In the left-hand room, a painful silence followed this refusal. In the right-hand room, his sister began to sob. Why didn't his sister join the others? She was probably newly out of bed and hadn't even begun to put on her clothes yet. Well, why was she crying? Because he wouldn't get up and let the chief clerk in. Because he was in danger of losing his job. And because the chief would begin dunning his parents for the old debts? Surely these were things one didn't need to worry about for the present. Gregor was still at home and not in the least thinking of deserting the family. At the moment, true, he was lying on the carpet, and no one who knew the condition he was in could seriously expect him to admit the chief clerk. But for such a small discourtesy, which could plausibly be explained away somehow later on, Gregor could hardly be dismissed on the spot, and it seemed to Gregor that it would be much more sensible to leave him in peace for the present than to trouble him with tears and entreaties. Still, of course, their uncertainty bewildered them all and excused their behavior. Mr. Samsa, the chief clerk called now in a louder voice. What is the matter with you? Here you are, barricading yourself in your room, giving only yes and no answers, causing your parents a lot of unnecessary trouble and neglecting. I mention this only in passing, neglecting your business duties in an incredible fashion. I am speaking here in the name of your parents and of your chief, and I beg you quite seriously to give me an immediate and precise explanation. You amaze me, you amaze me. I thought you were a quiet, dispensable person, and now all at once you seem bent on making a disgraceful exhibition of yourself. The chief did hint to me early this morning a possible explanation for your disappearance with reference to the cash payments that were entrusted to you recently, but I almost pledged my solemn word of honor that this could not be so. But now I see how incredibly obstinate you are. I no longer have the slightest desire to take your part at all, and your position in the firm is not so unassailable. I came with the intention of telling you all this in private, but since you are wasting my time so needlessly, I don't see why your parents shouldn't hear it too. For some time past, your work has almost been most unsatisfactory. This is not the season of your year for a business boom, of course, we admit that, but a season of the year for doing no business at all, that does not exist, Mr. Samsa, must not exist. But sir, cried Gregor, beside himself and in his agitation forgetting everything else, I'm just going to open the door this very minute. A slight illness, an attack of giddiness, has kept me from getting up. I'm still lying in bed, but I feel all right again. I'm getting out of bed now. Just give me a moment or two longer. I'm not quite so well as I thought, but I am all right. Really. How a thing like that can suddenly strike one down. One last night, Only last night I was quite well. My parents can tell you, or rather, I did have a slight presentiment. I must have showed some sign of it. Why didn't I report it at the office? But one always thinks that an indisposition can be got over without staying in the house. Oh, sir, do spare my parents. All that you're reproaching me with now has no foundation. No one has ever said a word to me about it. Perhaps you haven't looked at the last orders I sent in. Anyhow, I can still catch the 8 o'clock train. I'm much the better for my few hours' rest. Don't let me detain you here, sir. I'll be attending to business very soon, and to be good enough to tell the chief so, and to make any my excuses to him. Now, we just finished a little more of the story. It is getting a little more, I guess, fun. Some of you might be thinking, you know, why doesn't he just show them or reveal himself? Now, that does end up being a factor of discussion at the end of the story. That is an important aspect of who Gregor is as a person, emotionally and just personally. But it is getting to the good stuff, and before we continue on, we'll just play another song, and so we'll be right back. This is called 4 a.m. from Fontaine.
The rain's reminding me of how you said you didn't care about the weather anyhow. I know that you prefer it sunny. Well, I like the time we spend inside your room with the lights off. You wrapped me in a warm sheet, then you took my clothes off. I took your clothes off. I wish you'd have thought about this a bit sooner than you did. 'Cause now my heart is on the floor. Heart is on the floor. But I know you had the best intentions. You're so sweet, and that's what makes this hard for me. That's what makes this hard for me. That's what makes it hard for me.
Just finished listening to 4 a.m. from Fontaine. Now we do have time for one or two more paragraphs, and so we will give these a read and then wrap up for today. And while all this was tumbling out pell-mell, and Gregor hardly knew what he was saying, he had reached the chest quite easily, perhaps because of the practice he had had in bed, and now was trying to lever himself upright by means of it. He meant actually to open the door, actually to show himself and speak to the chief clerk. He was eager to find out what the others, after all their insistence, would say at the sight of him. If they were horrified, then the responsibility was no longer his, and he could stay quiet. But if they took it calmly, then he had no reason either to be upset, and could really get into the station for the 8 o'clock train if he hurried. At first, he slipped down a few times from the polished surface of the chest. But at length, with a last heave, he took upright. He paid no more attention to the pain in the lower part of his body, however they smarted. Then he let himself fall against the back of the nearby chair and clung with his little legs to the edge of it. That brought him into control of himself again, and he stopped speaking. For now he could listen to what the chief clerk was saying. "Did you understand a word of it? Did you understand a word of it?" the chief clerk was asking. "Surely he can't be trying to make fools of us." "Oh dear," cried his mother in tears. "Perhaps he's terribly ill and we're tormenting him." "Gret, Gret," she cried out then. "Yes, mother," called his sister from the other side. They were calling to each other across Gregor's room. "You must go this minute for the doctor. Gregor is ill. Go for the doctor, quick." "Did you hear how he was speaking?" "That was no human voice," said the chief clerk in a voice notably low beside the shrillness of the mother's. "Anna, Anna," his father was calling through the hall to the kitchen, clapping his hands, "get a locksmith at once." And the two girls were already running through the hall with a swish of skirts. How could his sister have got dressed so quickly, and were tearing the front door open? There was no sound of its closing again. They had evidently left it open, as one does in houses where some great misfortune had happened. Now that is it for today. We have read quite a bit of The Metamorphosis. Gregor is still stuck in his room. The chief clerk has come to visit. He is not pleased with Gregor's actions right now. So are his family members. And that is where we're going to leave off. If you guys enjoyed it, stick around for the next few or several more episodes. It is quite a lengthy short story, ironically. And so we will take some time reading this as a first-time series. And so that was that. I hope you guys enjoyed the first part of this story. Next episode, we'll continue on reading in continuation of this. It'll be on Tuesday, 5 to 6. But before we wrap up, I have one more song for you guys. It is called Fleet Avenue from Fontaine again. And so we will listen to this and wrap up the show. We'll be right back.
Do you remember walking through the fields? I was so afraid of getting ticks on my heels, but you told me that it was okay, so I stayed anyway. Yeah, I stayed. Do you remember driving to the beach in my old sick car? You in the passenger seat when we got there. It started to storm, but we stayed anyway. Yeah, we stayed. I don't want you to forget that. I know I won't forget that. Drunk on wine, fingers scratching your spine. When we woke up, we laid in your bed and we stayed there all day. Yeah, we stayed. I don't want you to forget that. I know I won't forget that. Standing in the car. told you were so afraid that I was letting you go. Then we went back home and we laid on the floor. Then we talked all night, but I still walked out the door. I'm sorry that I left anyway, that I left anyway. I know you won't forget that, but I hope you can forgive that.
Now that was Fleet Avenue by Fontaine. The time is up for today. We went over the short story, well, the first part of the short story, Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka, and played some songs from Fontaine. Please check them out if you are interested, and stick along for my next future episodes where I will continue on with Franz Kafka's The Metamorphosis. Have yourselves a beautiful evening. The rain has just, I guess, departed from us. The sun is coming back, and so take advantage of the sunshine. Have a great evening, and have a good rest of your week. Thank you all, and I'll see you again later. Bye-bye.